I'm Leah Ferguson from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and this is Alaska Voices, a place where community members, friends, and scientists can share stories and place-based knowledge in order to build a better tomorrow for Alaskans and the world.
Originally, I grew up in Gakona, Alaska.
Tyonek.
Egypt.
Idaho.
Rampart.
St. Lawrence Island.
St. Paul.
And I'm here with my student,
my science buddy.
My teacher.
My homie.
I'm his daughter.
My name is Jesse Robertson, and I'm talking to Dave Valentine, who's my colleague and friend.
And I am David Valentine. We are on the UAF campus, and I'm talking to Jesse, my colleague and friend.
So our colleague John Yeary passed away this last summer in June. He's one of these folks that retires and then stays.
He would be in his office most every day, working on getting papers written. John was a guy who took very seriously the idea of being a scientist and getting science done. You know, all of the stuff that still hadn't been written up by the time he retired, he still kept working at it.
He moved to Oregon after he retired, and he got a place just near Matt's parents' house in Corvallis. And so we actually went and visited him on Christmas break, like maybe a year and a half ago, in his new house. It's always a bummer when something like this happens, when somebody retires and then they pass away pretty quickly after. So I wonder what his hopes were for retirement.
It makes me sad knowing that he's not around, and knowing that happened way too early. You know, that just was, it was a complete shock. It wasn't out of character that we didn't find out about it until kind of after the fact. He was never somebody who would complain.
So let's go back in time. So when did you get to UAF?
If we want to rewind the clock back to my first experience with John, it was actually back in 1986. That was when I was starting a PhD with Dan Binkley at Duke University. And we came here to UAF, and I was really looking for a project for my dissertation. And the professor of forest soils at the time was Keith Van Cleve, and John Yeary was his postdoc. He was very much the same personality-wise as I remembered 10 years later when I came to work here. He was pleasant. He laughed a lot. But if he, you know, saw something that was worthy of some ridicule, he would ridicule it in a gentle sort of way. But he tended to call them as he saw them. I wound up coming here in 1996, and John became my close colleague in the Forest Soils Lab. And at the time, I started working on my own projects out at the Caribou Poker Creek's research watershed. John had some projects going on for the lab, and because I felt like I should be part of the lab, I went and helped on those projects as well. But there were times when the projects that John had dreamed up would keep everybody busy. The biggest one, I think, was the project that he started back in 1989. And that was a project to understand how moisture stress affected the growth of various tree species within floodplain and upland forest ecosystems, and all within the Bonanza Creek Experimental Forest. He dreamed up this idea of putting up greenhouse panels supported by a frame that would capture the water around the tree trunks and channel all that water off to the side, and then block any sort of soil moisture moving in and out of the plot by burying vertical sheets of plastic all the way around the plot. And I thought this was crazy. How are they going to deal with this problem and that problem? Well, I learned that they tried to minimize how much water was going along the tree trunk through the holes around the tree by damming off the water so that it would flow around, and they would take down all the panels every fall so that the snow in the wintertime wouldn't collapse them, and then they'd put them all up in the spring as soon as we could get out there so that they would start being effective again. And it was just a kind of a remarkable experiment, and he managed to get that replicated in three different floodplain sites and three different upland sites. And over time, that just mushroomed.
That was a postdoc when I first met all you guys. People were saying, oh, you should talk to John because they're doing this moisture experiment. And I talked to him about, like, could we put sapflux sensors in the trees? And he was like, no. So he was just worried about the sensors affecting the tree growth, which is fine. But when he and I would talk, and at first I was like, oh, okay, he's sort of interested in what I'm doing. That's cool. But then he would always end with, do you want to come help with the shelters? Because he was always angling to get an extra person to come help with the shelters. So I think I helped maybe like 1 or 2 years.
I sort of felt like I was about as close to him as people got, but I wouldn't say that I was close to him. He enjoyed going out to pub for a Friday evening of beer. In fact, he would often instigate that sort of thing. That was about as far as it would go. My wife and I moved houses here within town back in 2011, and we recruited as many people as we could find to help us, like, you know, do all the physical moving. And John was right there. I didn't have to ask him, you know, specifically. I just kind of said, I'm trying to get as many people as we can. And he voluntarily came out and broke a serious sweat helping out.
I remember something Matt said, like, Matt felt like he was, see if I accurately represent this, like, sort of following John around to make sure that John survived the day. Whether John rolled the snow machine onto himself or whatever, but John just sort of went for it because he's just like, yeah, at one point they had the boats out and John just like loaded the ATVs on the front of the boats. And then there's times John would just go for it in really shallow water with the boats and stuff like that. And Matt's like, oh my God, like, what are you doing?
I can pretty well relate to that. I remember being in a boat with John a few times where he would just keep it, the throttle up, and he would be going around these turns in the river where there are logs sticking up from under the river. And we would come close to them sometimes. And the riverboats, because they're flat-bottomed with a jet motor, they don't, when you turn, they basically do a lot of side-slipping. And so we would be side-slipping along, and it wasn't clear to me that we were necessarily going to have the new direction fully dialed in before we hit one of those logs. Yeah. It was always a little bit anxious for me.
I don't know if it's a generational thing, but there's sort of this sense of just like, huh, things are just going to work out. And things did just sort of work out. You know, there wasn't a lot of angst around it. Whereas I think maybe for those of us more that have come on in the last maybe 15 years, there's a lot of angst around everything because there's just fear all the time around budgets and having a job next year and just filling out contracts, all of that.
He had reasonable justification for that. You know, he's a tenured full professor who was in the system at an early enough stage that if he had to retire, he was sitting pretty. There really wasn't that much for him to worry about. I remember his frustration as budgets were being cut. Now, most of us experienced a mixture of apprehension and anger, right? The anger from, you know, the injustice of it, and apprehension from how is this going to affect, you know, what matters to me, not just my job, although that's there, but also things that I'm doing that I think are important. And as near as I could tell, he experienced only one of those. That's anger. He was pissed. Don't these people understand? This is important. How are we going to manage our forests if we don't have a forestry department? How are we going to train people for this stuff? The injustice of it was what motivated him.
We've had a couple tours come through the lab, and they were just saying, yeah, it's a shame there's just not a lot of training going on for up-and-coming forestry, anything, you know, even like there's no certificate, there's none of that. And the argument that I keep making, I'm like, gosh, we live in, what is it, the largest terrestrial biome on Earth, and the perspective of the forest is just mainly for like what products can it give us other than the fact that it's this place that we live. That's a massive part of the climate system and the terrestrial. It's just, it has two sides to that. Then, you know, as a lab, we've managed to secure a lot of resources to do a lot.
Thanks to you.
No, thanks. It's just interesting. So at least, you know, in some ways, it's worked out for us. And we feel better than we've felt in a long time in terms of security. But on the flip side, you know, I've had people reach out to me and be like, oh, what kind of forestry classes are being taught? And I'm like, none. And, you know, is there a forestry department? Nope. It's like both frustration that we're in the forest and we, you know, there's not a lot of interest in forestry research, but then it's also worked out in our favor because we're more, I feel like we're more stable for us soft money folks that are like perpetually afraid.
I would put a slightly different spin on it. I'm just going to draw a contrast between you and John from my perspective. John would write proposals and so forth, but there was always sort of a sense that, you know, these people should realize that this is important and they should just get on with it and spend the money. What's wrong with them? I think that you put the effort in to make sure that people understand the importance and you convince them in your proposals. This is important work to be done. You keep the marketing going, as it were. And I think that that's the difference. That is one difference, not the difference. So I think that's where John's kind of, it'll all work out, philosophy maybe falls down a little bit. Because people didn't automatically see the world the way that he thought was obvious they should see it as. You go ahead and do the convincing, the arm twisting to say, damn it, this is important. This is really key. And we have to be on this. You better fund this, because if we don't, we're going to be missing out on this incredibly important aspect of the climate system and so forth.
There's a lot of research in the boreal forest in Alaska that's still like foundational, fundamental research that it seems like so much research now has to be like applied to why Joe Schmo down the street's going to care about it and all the broader impacts and all this stuff. And not everything lends itself to that, and it doesn't make it any less important.
John looked at the science that he thought needed to be done, regardless of how sexy it was. It's like, oh, here are some things that we need to know. We need to know how fast logs decompose. He's never going to get much of a paper out of it. The people that are going to get papers out of it, the people who are going to have their careers benefit from it, are the people who are going to be writing those papers, you know, another 50 years from now. He just recognized the importance of it. And when he decided that, it's like, okay, we're going to go ahead and get that started, because that's what you do. That's what the science needs. And that was his motive. It was, what does the science need? And then go do it. That was the kind of thing that John wanted to see done and was willing to make the effort to see done. And that's the sort of thing that I think we miss if we don't have people like John and we don't have funding mechanisms like McIntyre Stennis that are able to be used for those somewhat unsexy but still necessary data streams.
And they fund positions that NSF can't fund. You know, NSF will never fund a full-time technician. You know, if we want good research, then we want continuity. We need to throw funding at staff scientist positions that are tech positions. These funding streams are really important for this type of long-term research. And then, you know, John pointing out there's some stuff you just have to do to get the ball rolling so that someone at some point benefits from the knowledge.
Alaska Voices is a place for communities to connect through conversation. This podcast was the brainchild of Jesse Young Robertson and Bob Bolton, with support from the Alaska Climate Adaptation Science Center, who also funded today's episode. The Alaska CASC is committed to providing regionally relevant science for Alaska's changing climate. Alaska Voices would not be possible without the efforts of an amazing group of people. Our producer and audio engineer is Kelsey Skonberg of Mossy Stone Media. The Alaska Voices team includes Micah Hahn at the University of Alaska Anchorage and Leah Ferguson, Mike DeLue, Annika Ord, and Diego Nareña at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. If you are interested in more conversations or information, please visit our website at alaskavoices.org.